So after the armistice was signed, you came back here to Hillsboro or McMinnville?
McMinnville, yeah, I came. My discharge was McMinnville, is my home. My dad was not expected to live after I got to Windsor, to New Westminster, near Vancouver. That telegram was waiting there for me, and I got special leave home. He had cancer of the throat. But I then had to go back, though, and he survived for a long time, about a month. And I went back and got my discharge and got a tailor-made suit, Canadian, up in Canada. My buddy and I got two tailor-made suits. We got what we call blood money. The British Army gives you $100, which was $100 those days. So we both got these tailor-made suits, beautiful wool suits. And I came back then and took over where I'd left off, supposedly. Got a job and one thing another. Decided I'd go to college, but that didn't work. I would have had to start in preparatory. That would be the high school equivalent of high school. They had an academy or a preparatory work, and I was so much older than the rest of the kids, the rest of the students, and all that. It kind of preyed on my mind, I guess. I didn't seem to cotton to it like I should have. I should have advanced through there like a wildfire, because my mind was supposedly more advanced, than the than the freshman in high school. But
what was the feeling among the people living here in McMinnville, Hillsboro area? Did they just as soon forget about the World War I?
Did they seem to?
Yeah. Or was there much talk about the...
No.
Woodrow Wilson and his 14 points and the world safe for democracy and all this?
American boys that they put on a tremendous effort. We met them the first trip over, I think it was. We met a platoon of American soldiers that were lost, that got lost somehow. It was awful easy to do. And we herded them along with us the remainder of that drive. We went about a mile, I think. And then they finally got lined up with their outfit again. But they were no different than anybody else. They were green. Heavens knows they had to go into it where we would be taken in as recruits and go in with an old outfit, an older battalion. But they just had to go in. Every damn one of them were green as grass. They never had any experience at all, which might be a good way to go. You don't know what you're running into. Well, the early battles of the Verdun and the Somme and some of those battles where they just pile dead up 5 foot deep, I think was mainly because it was the first experience for an awful lot of them. They figured that even though they were getting shot all the way around, all on both sides of them, that they would get through. And the German were famous for that. Well, the English were too. Years ago, they used to advance in spite of hell and high water. You just kept on going. And the Americans did the same thing in the Civil War.
And the people coming back from World War I, they were revered among the people living here, the people that stay home, are honored.
That's what now?
The soldiers that came back here to Hillsborough and McMinnville after the war, mm-hmm. were they honored by the people that stayed behind? The people, the farmers and their...
Well, they were a veteran was looked up to. They had preferences that did not apply after World War II to any near extent that they did after World War I. For some reason or other, I don't know why that was, but and after Vietnam, of course, that was they didn't have any preference at all, apparently. And no jobs were available anywhere you could go. A veteran could get a job. I took the postal examination, and I got a grade of 98, and still didn't get the job because several of the other guys were, I guess they were college graduates or something, because they snookered me out of it, even though I had a grade of 98 out of 100. Well, I didn't miss anything. I wouldn't have had any legs if I'd gone in the postal business, postman, mail carrier. No, I'm, this Vietnam fiasco was too bad that we ever got involved in that. Or why under the sun we didn't clean them out, I don't understand that. We could have smothered them. I honestly believe whether we were afraid of Russian intervention, what caused it, I don't know. Same way when they stopped MacArthur. I don't know what we were afraid of, but MacArthur would have made them eat dirt, believe me, if they'd left him alone. And I think myself, of course I'm no authority, but that was a terrible mistake. But that neither here nor there. That's my opinion.
And, during the 1920s, did the people just as soon forget about the affairs of state over in Europe? What was going on then?
In the 20s?
Yeah, after World War I.
After war. Oh yes, yeah. Yeah, I only did that. Yeah, no wonder those darn British officers thought I was a Dutchman. But, well, like our Legion, American Legion, is quietly folding up and will, in a matter of 5 years, well, you'll see maybe one or two riding on a flat on a float in the 4th of July parade. That's all that's left of us. And I'm 83, and I see 5 years. I don't worry about it, but they say old soldiers never die. But the certain glamour or something about them that does die. Just as sure as God made green apples, which is natural. And we still have a lot of respect for the American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars and all the rest. But there's something that sort of, you take the Memorial Day, for instance, and anywhere, a town this size, you'll have, maybe 15 or 20 at the cemetery. The flag raising and laying of wreaths on the tomb of one thing or another. And the Veterans of Foreign Wars out here have their the same ceremony. They'll have maybe 20 or 25 people there. Where we used to have a parade and all, quite a day of it. But now it's mainly they're mainly interested in a 2-day holiday over at the beach or something. They don't know about the damn war or the soldiers either. And that's natural. The army itself has deteriorated, I think, a lot. Enthusiasm for service in the country. People look down on it now, somehow or other. I think it should be compulsory. Every kid should go through at least a year and a half of military training, which would, if nothing else, teach them obedience and ability to perform orders that you're given. That's what the National Guard does right now, for that matter. It's something that they could use. It's good for them all through their life. And a lot of them know that that kid that went after these officers with that sword. I blame the officers, though, for killing him. I don't know why they both had clubs. What in the hell did they have to shoot him in the belly for that matter? It's beyond me. His legs and arms, that you could have downed him without shooting him in the belly, for God's sakes. But that's the nose damn gutcher. The Australians call it a gutcher. If you get hit in the, you know damn well you're done if you get hit in the stomach.
After World War I, then, Memorial Day was quite a time of remembering then.
It was, yes, and it's natural that we've all got folks that have been very dear to us that are buried in cemeteries, and a lot of them never get any recognition, whatever that is, flowers, we don't take time to do it. And it applies to soldiers as well. We've tried to put on a day here at the courthouse, or put on a program at the courthouse that I think last year there were maybe 25 people there on Memorial Day. I was fit to be tied because we came down Main Street, Washington. No, Lincoln, Jackson, the next street over, Jackson. Yeah, Jackson. We came down Jackson, past the courthouse, and with our flags, and there were three Mexican kids standing on the corner, giggling and looking at us and giggling. And I admit that we had no music, just kind of crawling along, slow march. That couldn't have been a very inspiring sight, but I didn't think it should have been a comical sight. None of it was to them. It was to them because they were laughing, but I was, like I say, I was so damn mad I could have bitten nails in two. Well, I happened to be one of the flag bearers. Oh dear, Mexican kids. Well, heavens. And I'm broad-minded enough so that, although I wish the Mexicans had stayed home, because we're loaded already. I'm broad-minded enough to know that we're all humans, so created after God's image, and so we, to say that we're better than some other race of people is, that's about as low as you can get. All men are created equal. And the color of their skin, or the other odds and ends that shouldn't make a particle of difference, it invariably will. It always will. It's too bad we weren't all born colorblind. I think that would have helped.
What was your activities then once you came back here to McMinnville? You mentioned you got involved with a nursery of some kind.
Did I do what?
You became involved in a nursery. Nursery.
In the military?
No, after you came back from World War I.
Yeah.
What did you do after your logging experiences here in Hillsboro?
Oh, well, I came to Hillsboro mainly because my brother, who was a foreman at the big greenhouse where Johnny is now, Johnny Tufel, that big greenhouse as you go out of town, was foreman there, and I decided that I could make a living at that and learn. So I went over there to work with him, and I was there 15 or 20 years. I ended up the lone possessor of that property, but that was at a very low ebb in our economy. It got to a point where you couldn't give away property. We got our house, $3,500, bought that house there for $3,500. And the greenhouse property was valued then at about $35,000, $40,000. But you couldn't have, in fact, the only offer I got was from Johnny Tufel. And he has taken it over and built it up into a multi-million dollar outfit now, which would be equivalent to at the time it was, the transaction was made right after World War II. At that value would have been right now it'd be well over $500,000-$600,000, but I think Johnny now has got over $1 million invested there, Johnny Tufel. But he had a money available that I didn't have. I turned down offers on 11 acres that Mr. Clark, who owned this place over here on Garibaldi Street, just by the railroad. He wanted a sidetrack there. The railroad wouldn't give it to him. So he just kept that as an investment. He bought that 11 acres for $5,500 an acre, and went out and bought the property out here. And during the Depression, Mr. Clark came to me and wanted to me. He said, "Bill, I want you to take this mortgage for that 11 acres. There's a mortgage on it for $1,500 and I can't pay it." Mr. Clark got into a bad way. He extended too much credit. He had a flower shop in Portland and he extended too much credit and he folded up. But I could have had it for $1,500. That 11 acres, there's houses all over it now. But I didn't want it. Nobody wanted it. The man who had extended the loan of $1,500 on it kept it. As far as I know, that's where I lost track of it from then on. But it shows you what up and down that our economy can take. And people today don't seem to realize that we are just as bound to hit the skids again as we did then. See, when Mr. Clark bought it in 1911, property was booming. He gave $500 an acre for that ground. Wow, that was unheard of, you know, $500 an acre. But everything was going to go up and up and up. And it went up and up and up for a while, but the depression hit and everything went to hell the other way. But there, I don't know exactly how we will get out of this mad spiral that we're in. I'm not in it. I stopped in 1960, damn it. That's when I, you know, that's when I leveled off and retired. Well, those $1960 dollars that we retired on are worth about 35 cents now. But you can't, people can't see that. We're going to get by. We're going to get by fine. But it don't make sense. I don't know what exactly got us started in it except just plain human greed. They just Yankee ingenuity, or what you're going to call it, but the whole world is affected. So it isn't just the Americans. England is worse off than we are. And Germany and Japan, two of our worst enemies once upon a time, but the only ones that seem to be profiting. West Germany. I don't know how East Germany is. That's Russian. That's Russian. And I'm beginning to get a sneaking hunch that there's more things about Russia that we should know, more good things that we should know about Russia. If we're going to avoid a complete bust-up. But that's, I'm going to worry about it. Hamburger at $2 a pound, well, we'll get by. But it seems that we could avoid it. It should be avoidable, but not with politics. I don't know whether you're politically inclined or not, but I can't see the way our politicians work. I can't tolerate it.
Mm-hmm. Back in the 20s then, was that when the nursery business first began out there at
Tupelo's? And the Aremco at that time, that was right after World War I. The Aremco Nursery Company out here, there was this boom on then, a slight boom of a building, and they had vast holdings in there of nursery stuff. Nursery goods, trees, bushes, shrubs. And when the Depression hit, it folded up just like a wilted flower. In no time at all, it went gone bankrupt. And if they could have, well, there's a lot of outfits now that are just booming. Right out here, the Walters, I think it is Walters, has a big place out here. And the Japanese, Iwasaki, his dad and mother used to be out there scrubbing around in the field. And heavens knows they've got a tremendous organization now, making lots of money. But we've got to go through it, and this is sure as fate. They devalue the money, or some way they've got to get leveled off. They can't. It don't make sense. We all know it doesn't make sense. And we keep right on.
Was there quite a business for the nursery stock back in the 20s then?
Oh yeah, tremendous business, yeah. Like there is right today.
It was national and international trade then? commodities?
Well, not so much international. It was just local, statewide. You notice your homes now, they, out through here, I noticed they've got flowering shrubs around them before they're much more than finished, before the house is painted, these new building projects, and that's all nursery work. But, shrubbery. No one can, any of that type of work where you know how to make things grow, why they pay off. Pay a dollar for a tomato plant that cost 2 cents to raise, or you're going to make some money somewhere. We didn't raise that. We raised flowers altogether, roses, all roses. And Johnny is doing roses now that we didn't dream of while we were there. But they have new varieties. And he has a lot of new ideas that he has put to work, less labor connected with it. But no, he's done a remarkable job out there. Did you ever go through his place? He built an enormous big wood chip burning establishment. To take over in case their oil. He does have some gas, but the gas company would not guarantee that they could give him enough gas to run the whole place, to heat the whole place. So he has a small amount of gas he can use, and oil, heaven knows how much his oil bill is now with the amount of glass he's got. We had 1 acre under glass, and Johnny must have at least 5 acres now. And practically all roses, stems like that we didn't have, that type of rose. They didn't grow like that. It wasn't the fertilizer, it was just, well, it's just like the different one bush will grow one way and another one doesn't grow. That's all. You have to breed them out of it, in other words, propagate them. Get the varieties that will do best for you.
Why do you think the nursery business did so well here in Hillsborough, Tualatin Valley area, back in the 20s? Was it the climate, or?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, just the natural, like people love decorating their yards, and a lot of it's just shrubbery that everybody wants. And easily taken care of as far as that goes. It's all outdoor crops. Greenhouse crops, it's a horse of a different color. You got to have heat.
That was something that they didn't have back in the 20s, greenhouses?
How's that?
Did they have greenhouses back in the 1920s?
Yeah, they were. See, that was built in 1911. The original greenhouse at where John is now at Tufel was built in 1911, and that was during a booming period. There's Portland was growing. He had his main shop on Morrison Street, Clark Brothers. And paid $500 a month rent for that place. I think that's about what LaHaye pays the. Maybe I shouldn't be talking about that. I'm an odd fellow, and the odd fellows own that corner there where LaHaye is, and I know he pays a good it keeps us out of trouble in a way. Our lodge, the rental from that and from the modern interior, more than supports our lodge activities.
Why do you think the nursery business nosedived in the 30s then? Depression times? Was that the cause of it?
No, what was that again? I didn't get that.
Did the nursery business fall apart during the 1930s?
Yeah. Oh, we burned up piles of it. Dig it up and pile it out. If it gets too far, too old, it won't transplant. And we had bonfires out there of all kind of nursery stock that should have, at the rough time, would have made money after I'd taken it over. But when things break, why they break, and values, you soon lose sense of values. And it's like me turning down $1,500 for 11 acres, for heaven's sakes. I could have borrowed the money, and but I couldn't see, nobody else could seemingly nobody else had any more insight than I did. No, you can talk to any old timer and they will tell you the same thing. Right now, people, young folks, go into debt head over heels for all manner of things. They'll buy a new home, and they buy a mobile home, and they buy a boat, a motorcycle, two cars, and a pickup. Heaven. They go at it like they've gone money mad. I don't know. I know they can't make the payments, half of them. I don't know how you're situated. There's a lot of them that, I know, you know, one family in particular out here, they're going to lose their brand new home. They bust it up and they can't have it. Between the two of them, they're separated. She's living with a man she's not married to. All kinds of things go along nowadays that we didn't tolerate in my day. That business of premarital cohabitation, you know. There wasn't any of it in my day. You went to jail, that's all. You got caught at it and you went to jail. There was no argument about it. It says in the Bible, no, and that was the law of the land. But before you're my age, I don't know whether they'll be, the Bible will lose an awful lot of respect, I know that. It's going to lose an awful lot of respect from the general public.